Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report weekend. It used to be politics, now we're starting to talk what I consider to be a little bit more common sense. By the way, you gold bugs out there are really going to enjoy the second half of my portion of the program. I got one of the foremost experts in the world who's going to talk about why gold is a good investment right now, in his opinion. Boy, and you talk about putting your money where your mouth is. He is definitely, Stephen Leeb is definitely putting his money where his mouth is. We're going to start out a little bit talking about a change that I really believe has to occur within America. You know, I turn on the news right now, and all I'm seeing is negativity. Going back to Seattle, I mean, people are going to say, well, that had nothing to do with politics. Well, the fact of the matter is the political situation in the country right now has to change, because it is causing way too much anxiety, angst, venom, etc., etc. The only way that's going to change is if the politicians try to make America a better place as a whole. Not going to throw any sticks and stones right now, just going to work on that one. We're going to go back to what Rodney King said as he was getting beaten damn near to death down in Los Angeles. He said, why can't we all just get along? I'm saying that right now. I got Jimmy on the line with me right now. I want Jimmy to talk a little bit about his military career, why he did what he did. All he was trying to do, and this is not, that sounds like it wasn't very much, but it's a huge thing he was trying to do. He really wanted to make the world a better place. And you know what? In the Far East, in the Middle East, he basically risked his life to make that happen. Jimmy, let's talk about that.
Well, Al, you know, the principles that I fought for and that I served under this nation for were outlined specifically in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And I swore an oath to support and defend that Constitution. The right to free speech, the right to freedom of assembly, the right to be able to have a media that would openly discuss without threat of pressure from a government, and the right to worship and have faith as you wish, as you believe, or not to, as you choose. And, you know, that was my role. And I was out there. I did a lot of different things as a military diplomat, as a foreign area officer, worked in multiple embassies. And I worked with from Muslim nations to Christian nations to, you know, other faiths and people with no faith. But most importantly, what I wanted to do and what I put my heart into was trying to make those places better and more open and more free, similar to what I had lived in here in the United States and the benefits that I received from America. And that was important to me. I believe there's something changing right now. A lot of people will say, well, we were never that great. America was never that great. But in reality, in my view, America has been the pinnacle and the light. In 1776, there were no other democracies on this planet. And the men that wrote the Constitution and worked over those couple of decades to finalize this balance of power government made a difference. And now the expectations for the rest of the world are to live with those basic principles they strive and attempt to achieve, and all others are judged based on those principles. And we're losing that in this world right now, and we're losing it right now here in America. And that's unfortunate.
I want to talk about that in just a minute, because I realize that in many cases we are losing that right now. But I want to go back to the First World War. I just got done reading a book entitled "The War That Ended Peace." It's a book where the author Margaret Macmillan basically talks about the 10 years prior to the outbreak of World War One. World War One ended up, when all was said and done, with a victory on the part of the United States, France, and Great Britain. Had that not occurred, it's hard to say where the world would be today. When I said the U.S., Great Britain, France. I also want to include Russia in there because Russia was obviously very definitely a part of that particular alliance. It's hard to predict. You really can't predict. You can never predict the future, and it's very interesting right now to even discuss what could have happened at the end of World War II had the Germans and the other folks won that. So all I want to say is an interesting coincidence was that at that time, one of our listeners is trying to get in right now, but I'm unfortunately going to keep him out. That's Irish Tony. We might bring him in for the second half if he wants to just listen. Anyway, having said that, coincidentally, during the First World War, I'm not saying the result of America's involvement in it was totally due to Woodrow Wilson. I'm just saying he happened to be a Democrat. Okay, the U.S. came in, and I think was the main reason, perhaps, that we were victorious in the First World War, which was just stupid. Second World War, same thing. The United States came in, and I know Jim takes a little bit of umbrage when I say this, but one of the results of the U.S. involvement in the Second World War is our strength allowed us to save basically the Jewish race, in my opinion. It's hard to say what would have happened had we lost, but I'm telling you one thing, a lot of my friends would not be around today if we had lost that. Who was in power? Well, I was a Democrat. Franklin Roosevelt. Was he responsible? No. The American people were responsible for that. Not the president necessarily, but the American people. We're in a situation right now where we are absolutely getting close to what I would call a critical, critical situation in keeping our country together. There is so much hatred right now, and that hatred is being caused by the liberals and the conservatives. And this is something that Jimmy and I are going to elaborate on a little bit. Both of these people have to give a little, and they have to bring our country back together. That is absolutely critical right now. You know, a funny story. I was doing my physical therapy last night, and I was watching Fox News. I was watching Hannity, and Levine came on. Levine was spewing hatred as much as anything that I have seen from virtually any of the liberals, and they are really, really spewing hatred. I see the same thing on Fox News right now. Fox and everybody else, they have to forget about the profits. They have to forget about being the number one news network. They have to work together to save our country. There is so much venom, so much anxiety, so much depression going on in the United States that we have to stop. Everybody has to kind of hitch up their pants, and they have to say, we simply have to work together. Jimmy, I want you to wrap up this segment, and we've only got 1 minute.
Yeah, first I want to say that I don't take umbrage that the U.S. did saved the Jewish people in Europe. We did. I just don't think people understood what was happening until later. And the second part, I think, is your point is a good one. Wouldn't it be nice if we could actually get back to politics and dialogue and discussion to where people can really begin to have earnest debate without the vitriol? And unfortunately, right now, there's too many pressures.
I agree.
Against that. And the problem is why? You have to ask why. And that's the question maybe we should discuss in the second half, the next segment, because what is the benefit, and why are people doing this, and why are the tech companies silencing voices?
I agree.
What's happening?
Jimmy, I got to cut you because we're going to have to do a commercial here in eight minutes. So I'm going to say, ladies and gentlemen, stick around. Jim and I are going to be right back. Working together is what has to happen, and I will give accolades to anybody who accomplishes that.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. chatting with Jim McKinney right now about the concept that I firmly believe in, and that is that America has to start working together. Got a surprise guest on the show also. I told him he didn't have to say anything if he didn't want to, but if he wanted to, he is more than welcome to. So our show today is truly, truly coming from an international standpoint. We have Irish Tony, who is one of our more prolific bloggers and a very sensible man, I have to say, on the show. If he'd like to come in, he's more than welcome to. Okay, we've only got 8 minutes and 15 seconds here. We've already used up 44 seconds. All I want to say is, to me, it's critical that America starts working together, both political parties. There is so much venom out there, so much anxiety, and so much depression. You know, 5 people were shot to death last night in Seattle, Washington, and I think a result to that, and that was a result, I think, of the huge amount of angst that's going on in our country. Interestingly enough, this took place in a gunfight that occurred right by Jimi Hendrix Park. What a rotten way to preserve, I would have to say, one of the greatest musicians of all time's memory. Anyhow, having said that, I want to say that I think it's really critical that both parties start working together, and I really want to explore one thing. I think that the traditional Democratic Party really would like to see that happen also, but I think the troublemakers, for lack of better terms, are the Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez people. I think they are looking for something that is not possible in our country. Everybody believes America is a great country. Let's keep it that way, because right now it's on the verge of falling apart. Jimmy, opine on that, would you?
So, you know, the Ocasio-Cortezes, they have an influence on what's happening, but right now there's a group of bedfellows that may not have ideologically similar ideas, but are working towards the same goal. And that's to protect the interests of the elite and what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what's happened for decades. And really, I will say, a bit of the corruption that continues in there, the way the system works. And so the Ocasio-Cortezes, the progressives, and the institutional Republicans, and many of the institutional Democrats, are all supporting this impeachment effort in order to push back against a rising American population that's waking up to what's happened in our government that is neglecting their interests. And there are multiple reasons for it, but they're coming together for the same purposes. And it's damaging. It's incredibly damaging to our nation right now.
As an Irishman or an Englishman, Tony, what do you think about what Jimmy just said?
Oh, I agree 100% with him. Or to quote George Carlin, they don't give a beep about you. It's as simple as that. It's all about power for them. It's keeping a little club going. They don't care about the people. We have a similar government here in the UK. They really don't care about the people. It's all about power, consolidating power, holding power, and it's nothing more than that. They will get people at each other's throats for as long as they can, to keep the focus off them.
And Tony, I think that what's really important to understand is, what are the interests behind this? And if in fact it's against those groups' interests to open up and be more supportive of and calm, then why would they do it? And that's the unfortunate part that we're seeing right now in Washington, and the spectacle that's ongoing is they're not looking at the interests of for the people, but it's not in their political interest or in their power interest to do it. So why would they change? Why would they come together? And that's a really important question for people to ask out there publicly. And I see what's happening in the UK, and with even the Johnson government and the tremendous victory the Conservatives had a year and a half ago, but they're losing a lot of their basic principles and values right now. It's crazy. And we're seeing the same thing happen here with silencing of speech and voices and any debate. It's amazing how rapidly this is changing in the world.
You know, I want to say one thing. I'm very proud to be an American. My parents were Russian immigrants, came over in 1917 with their parents. And America in my lifetime has done some really, really wonderful things. I mean, we came in, whether you're a peacenik or not, you know, we did come in and basically throw our support in what I believe is the right direction during the Second World War. And as a matter of fact, I think that we actually saved an entire group of people, but being the Jewish folks. Now, I also want to say that America is smart enough to be able to dialogue on issues that we may be wrong about. Vietnam's a great example. I think we were very definitely wrong in the Vietnam situation, but we dialogued about it. Sure, there were some demonstrations that turned violent, but the fact of the matter is the general consensus today is the U.S. being involved in Vietnam was a mistake on the part of the leadership at that time. I've read numerous books about that, and I firmly believe it. So we can celebrate, we can also dialogue and admit mistakes when they happen. The only people who are not allowing that right now are people who want to be the prettiest baby in the nursery, and they let anger control their direction. Guy's got about 2 minutes left here.
Yeah, it's not just anger, Al. It's actually money. When you're talking about the tech companies, it's control, it's money, and it's silencing voices. If somebody tells you you can't ask a question, then they're trying to hide something, and that's what's happening right now. People can't even ask questions about election fraud. They can't even ask questions about COVID. They can't ask questions about military involvement around the world, and that is absolutely unacceptable in a Western ideology in our system, but somehow it's becoming supported by an entire political party and a whole network of people inside Washington that are silencing voices.
And all I'm saying is both parties have to start working together. You know, Donald Trump is not a very conciliatory guy. A lot of people really dislike him, and that's fine. Who cares? You know, but again, by the same token, the Democrats have people who are being totally unconciliatory right now. Nancy Pelosi is a great example, as is Chuck Schumer. Now, I have a bit of respect for both Pelosi and Schumer, and I'll tell you why. They got to basically one of the pinnacles in terms of heights, in terms of politics, and I have to respect them for that. Basically, spewing venom and anger is something I don't respect. There are too many ways to make America a better place if, as Rodney King said, why don't we all just work together? I'm not seeing anybody working together right now, and that breaks my heart, let me tell you. I do not understand. America was a great country, is a great country still, because we all worked together at one time. You guys, stick around. I've got to take a break for the top of the hour news right now. Okay, Tony, you're a radio star.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KE Report. You know, you've already all listened to the first half, and you know that I'm a firm believer in trying to get our country back together socially. Not necessarily politically, but I'm trying to get our country back together by eliminating at least 95% of the venom that's out there right now. Very, very important to me, and the only way that's going to happen, in my opinion, is if both sides are willing to bend a little bit. After I speak with Dr. Chuck here in a minute, Chuck Page, we're going to get his views on a solution, and then I'm going to talk with Dr. John Huber, PhD clinical board certified clinical psychologist, and we're going to get his views also. I think we need some outside views on this particular deal. Chuck, you and I have talked in the past about bringing America back together. I'm not going to ask you if you think that's possible. Huber and I are going to talk about that. But I'm going to ask you, what do you think the solution is, Chuck?
Well, I'm glad you're going to have Dr. Huber on because I failed my psychiatry rotation. So I just want to kind of share with you a story. I think one of the things that everybody is challenged with right now is the racism issue and the division that we're facing, critical race theory. And so I go to Africa and I do work in mission hospitals and fill in for the real heroes there. And so I was in Mabingo Hospital, which is in Cameroon. This was in 2006. And they brought this little Fulani boy in with just writhing in belly pain after a motorbike accident.
Yeah.
So we took him to the operating room, and I got in there, and it was a mess. He was bleeding. His spleen was busted. And as I began to take out his spleen, you know, once again, I asked anesthesia to give him blood, and very politely they said, "Doctor, we don't have any blood." And then I asked for clamps, and they gave me these old beat-up clamps that slipped, and trying to take out the spleen. In the middle of the operation, the room goes dark, the electricity goes off, and the only sound you can hear is the anesthetist squeezing the bag, breathing the patient. And so as I'm sitting there praying, wondering, well, how is this all going to work out, someone came in with a flashlight, fortunately, and shown the flashlight in the wound and said, "Doctor, now operate," you know. So
yeah.
In broken English, I took out the spleen, and, you know, and as I was closing the case, I began to think about that and kind of process that. You know, it was good to know that, you know, the spleen is a spleen is a spleen, whether it's in Alabama or Arkansas or Alaska or, you know, in Africa, you know, it's the same. And, you know, anatomy is the same, and their absolutes are the same. And it kind of reminds me about human individuals. In a sense, we're all the same, you know. And, you know, from a Judeo-Christian standpoint, just thinking about that, we're all the same. You know, if you look at what the scriptures say about race, actually it says that we're all one race.
Yeah.
You know, black and white and red and yellow. So we're all in this together. We all do share a common predicament. You know, if you think about it, you know, people who say, "Well, I don't see color." Well, actually, Al, we all see color. And, you know, it's kind of like it would be an insult to God to say that you don't see color. You know,
yeah.
Because think about when you look at a rose, there are all different kinds of varieties of roses. Each has their own beauty. Also, each has their own thorns. But thinking about that, so when we look at, you know, another person, it's obvious that we're going to see color, you know, but also recognizing that all people are created in the image of God. And that's what the Judeo-Christian kind of viewpoint says. Whether they're black or white or red or somewhere in the middle, everyone's created in God's image, and we're all one race, and we're all in this together. The problem is that we all have thorns. You know, roses have thorns, and each culture, you know, has its positive and its negative aspects. I mean, you go to the East, and, you know, what's really important to them is hospitality. I mean, you come and knock on a friend's house here in the United States, we're too busy, you know. And so each culture has, you know, ways in which we reflect the image of God, and there's also other ways that we, you know, that we miss the mark. And so thinking about that and thinking about race, that we're all in this together, you know, what Christianity specifically says is that, you know, it brings people together, people of all different nations, of different socioeconomic factors, you know, people from different races. And, you know, it doesn't oppress us. I mean, that's one of the things I'm hearing is that, you know, is that people are being oppressed by religion and things. But in fact, if you really look at it, you know, that worldview, I mean, it's like we're oppressing people, we're oppressing one group of people to free another group of people from oppression. It's just repeating the cycle. You know, Christianity says something very different now. Christianity says, hey, we're going to bring people together. We're going to unify people from all different nationalities and all different skin colors and you know, socioeconomic levels and education levels. And I think that's something that we need today. We need to think about that from a Christian worldview, that that there is another way of thinking, and it's not a way to oppress another group. It actually brings all people together, women included, gender included. We're all included in this, and that we're all, you know, in a sense, one race. We're all created in God's image. Yes, we all have flaws. We all have ways that we, you know, reflect God's image. But yet, there's possibilities there.
Let's talk about the possibilities.
Absolutely. So, you know, just thinking about the fact that, you know, one of the things that Christianity says is that we can, and one of the things that Christianity says is that we can forgive each other. And, you know, really, I think we need to get to that point where we realize that black, white, all of us, we all, in a sense, have offended other people, you know, in some form or fashion. And that's one of the great things about Christianity, is that Christianity offers forgiveness, saying that, first of all, that because Christ forgave us, you know, we have the opportunity to forgive other people when we're offended. Doesn't mean that we sweep that offense under the rug. It just means that, you know, that God is fair and that God is just by putting everything, all of the judgment upon Christ, so that we don't have to deal with that. And so, that's a very liberating kind of philosophy. Understand that because we've been forgiven, we can forgive other people. And that's, I think that's, you know, without understanding that, we're never going to be able to step forward, being able to forgive each other of the way that we have offended other people in the past, and other, you know, people of other ethnicities.
You know, I got to tell you, Chuck, that's the smartest thing I've heard today. I'm dealing with some situations that are very, very difficult. I consider myself to be a Christian every bit as much as you are. I read the Bible daily, at least I try to. I read non-secular information daily, at least I try to. And I have completely, in my turmoil, I have completely forgotten about the power to forgive. That solves every single problem that I have. And you know what? If the man upstairs tells me, I believe him, and he says purely and simply in the Bible, you have the ability to forgive people who you might consider to be your enemies. Now, admittedly, in order to do that, those of us who are fairly bullheaded, you know, have to get past that. And we have to become God-headed, in my opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a real quick commercial break here. I promise you, I'm going to set up a daily recording time for our weekly show with Dr. Chuck. His information is invaluable. KER report. Got Dr. John Huber on the line with me. He finally got out of jail. He's been in jail for the last 60 days, and so I haven't had him on the show. They treat you okay, Johnny?
Yeah, you know, you pay an attorney, you know, $70,000-$80,000, and they'll take care of you.
Having said that, John, the theme of the program today has been the only way that our country is going to get back on track is if we all work together. I really question, from a psychological standpoint, John, if that's even possible. What do you think, sir?
Well, first of all, their actions, they may talk about wanting to work together. Their actions are not showing us that they want to work together. You know, the left has gone through all social media and shut off every voice on the right. They don't want, for example, our president's going through this fake impeachment. He's no longer in office. Constitutionally, he can't be impeached, but they're doing it anyway.
Right.
And they're setting him up. and they're using parts of his speech and they're taking it completely out of context, not playing even complete sentences of his speech, and say, see, he's inciting to riot, when for the last 5 years, actually longer than that, the 4 years, 6 years after, you know, of Obama, the last 6 years of Obama and then the 4 years of Trump, they have the left has been pushing them, the followers of the left, to violence and telling them to strike out if you see a white owner of a business, to go after them. And now they want us to come together and hug each other. But they still are going after this impeachment when we have a country that is struggling because of these COVID regulations, and they won't come together and actually address any type of help or, you know, what the plan is.
Right.
But it took them 10 seconds to come together and create this pseudo farce of a court. And it's asinine, and nobody, even on the left, is watching it in the general population. It's all a dog and pony show, and they're showing you how much power they have and how you can't talk out against them, because if anybody says anything on social media against the impeachment, they immediately get blocked. They said, oh, that's a lie. It's not the truth. It's, you know, it's been fact-checked by one of our independent fact checkers who we pay out of our own pocket, so you can trust them. So
it's not possible physically. Yeah, my concern is, in reality, I think you would have to admit, as a very intelligent human being, people are going to have to come together, and will they eventually come together? I don't know. But I would have to say that with everything that I'm seeing, and I'm a real political junkie, as you know, I'm not seeing any actions are going to do much of anything in terms of bring the country together. And I got to tell you, Johnny, that makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, politicians, whether it's Biden, whether it's Kamala Harris, whether it's Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, theoretically, they're all in office because they want to make America a better place. America right now is not in a good place, and people are going to have to give a little to make it a good place. It's the only way it's going to work. You know, I'm on the record over a year and a half ago as saying that the biggest problem that Donald Trump has is that he is totally unconciliatory. And I think that's to this day, I still think that's true. Do I think he's a bad guy? I'm not going to comment on that. I don't think he's a bad guy. I just commented on it. But he is certainly has a type of personality that believes he's the prettiest baby in the nursery. And that's something that a politician cannot have, in my opinion, John.
Well, you know, the one thing he did do, regardless of whether the left or the right wanted him to do it, is he did what he thought was in the best interest of everyday people. I mean, he took money away from the rich by getting rid of different tax breaks and things like that, but giving tax breaks to the middle class. He got unemployment to levels we haven't seen since the 50s, and everybody says how evil he is and how he was, you know, he was doing it as a dictator. Well, look how many, you know, and defined by the left of by doing executive orders and the number of executive orders he did. Yet their own leader, Biden, has done in the first 2 weeks did over 42 executive orders to Trump's 5.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know,
everybody's making mistakes, but America must
absolutely
come together.
I think they have to, and I think they will, but it's not going to come together because of our politicians. I think we're going to come together in spite of our politicians, left and right.
Who's going to pull it off? There's got to be a there's got to be a leader who pulls the trigger, John.
There will be. Okay, but what's, you know, it's too soon. Okay, from a psychologist looking at society, I think it's too soon, because right now I think what we're seeing is is sticker shock. I mean, the left is going, we put him in there and we look at everything. Wait a minute. Gasoline's going up. He cut off our, you know, our independence. And he, wait, we still have to pay those people building the wall because it's contractually obligated. They didn't stop doing it. The feds called it off. So they're still paying those contractors to build the wall. So they're sitting there collecting that money. And people are going, wait, what's the deal with this? I thought, you know, and it's not making things better. The world is getting worse in the economy. And it's not just the COVID regulations at this point, because we continued to have cheap fuel, but it's not happening anymore. Just look at the gas tanks, gas gauges at just local stations. Those numbers are climbing. And I've heard numbers as high as $12 a gallon by the end of the year.
Seriously?
Well, you know, I'm in Texas. I have a lot of oil people here, and some of them are just PO'd. So, so they may be exaggerating, but some of them probably know what they're talking about, you know, because what else has he done? Within 24 hours, he occupied Syria with the American military. Within another 24 hours, he started laying the groundwork for a new Gulf War by going after Iran.
Yeah.
This guy is dangerous. And for the first time in I don't know how many generations, we had withdrawn from all our military conflicts. And it was the warmonger. Remember, we were told how Trump was the warmonger? He was the one who did it. He got us out of those.
Yeah.
You know, and he is, you know, when the when the media has to tell you something about somebody, they're not that way, because their actions tell you how they are, and the media doesn't want you to see those actions. So when they say somebody is a racist, they're not a racist, because all they'd have to do is tell you what the person actually did, and you would make that own conclusion on your own. But if they're having to tell you he's the smartest man on the planet, he's not. I mean, it's just, you're in media, I'm in media, we've both been on radio and television forever. We know how the system works.
Yeah.
And when the media has to tell you these things, it's not factual. They're driving you, and it's, you know, they just beat that dead horse until you believe it. That's what I see happening. And who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? We're going to see it. You know, there's a lot of people in the right-wing media arena who are out there. I wager to say it's going to be somebody we don't know who they are yet. It's going to be somebody who surprises us. It's going to be somebody who is very centered, and they're going to draw both sides.
Well, John, I got to say we're just about out of time here, but I have to say that everything you're saying is very, very logical. There's no question whatsoever about that. We're going to get a lot of comments on this. I'm going to direct some of those comments to you, maybe in an editorial Please. That we can do this week. Yeah, because I think it's very important. Our country has to mend. Are the Democrats or are the liberals going to accomplish that? I don't know. If they have to do it by force, they will not accomplish it, in my humble opinion. Dr. John Huber, I appreciate your advice, sir. You are an expert. I got all the time in the world for you, sir.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.